Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and every Wednesday at 11 a.m., we have a conversation about my two favorite subjects, food and taste. And today, we're going to have a conversation about my favorite subtopic in those two areas, and that is Southern taste, because I have with me what seems like the entire Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. It's a packed house here at Roberta's in Bushwick, but it's really just a small piece of what's going to be happening May 30th to June 2nd in Atlanta. And we're really excited to talk with our guests today. We have Dominique Love and Elizabeth Feichter, who are the co-directors of the festival. But also with us are Katie Button, who is the chef of Curate in Asheville, North Carolina, and Todd Richards, who's the chef of The Shed at Glenwood, I should say, in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to be talking about Southern food today, because what else does anyone seem to want to hear? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Katie, you say thank you too.
Thank you.
So as you can tell, we're packed here in the shipping container adjacent to Roberta's here in Bushwick. Probably for our friends in the South who have lots of space and real estate and all those sorts of things, it's a funny little way to be. I guess I want to start with Dominique and Elizabeth. Just tell me a little bit about the festival, and I know we're in the midst of this movement where every town, every village, every everything is having a food festival. What makes Atlanta Food and Wine Festival unique?
We are the only festival in the nation that's focused exclusively on the South, and that's something that we're really proud of. We have a long-standing tradition of Southern food and culture, and amazing time that we spend around the family table, so to speak. And so when we came up with the concept of the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, we really wanted it to be something that people could learn about Southern food and about our history and traditions and really enjoy the amazing talent that are doing things across the South. We exclusively focus on the South. Our chefs are all from the South, as well as our products and our beverages.
Okay, and I know this is going to be a crazy question, but what is the South, Katie? What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I was born in South Carolina and grew up in New Jersey, but moved back to the South 3 years ago to open my own restaurant. And to me, the South is about family. It's about community. It's about tradition. It's what I love. And it's exciting to be there again.
And is there something, Todd, about Southern food? I think of there's so many different places in the South. We talk about it like it's one thing, but of course, New York City isn't one thing. The New England isn't one thing. Explain a little bit about what the South is to you.
I can tell you it's not fried chicken.
What? Fried chicken. My partner from Alabama would beg to differ, even though he's not listening.
But actually, you know, all these great ingredients grow down in the South, and it's a wonderful place to learn about culture and history, but it's also a wonderful place to be a great chef right now. I mean, everything that I want, I can get, you know, 100 miles from the restaurant. I don't have to go all the way to California to get it, except for maybe fish. But other than that, it's just a wonderful place where people can learn about food and be themselves and cook whatever food they want to cook.
So what I'm hearing is Southern food is food cooked in the South. Is there something more there? Dominique looks like she wants to add something.
Yeah, I'm chomping at the bit on this one. You know, the South for us is a place of tradition. It's a place of centuries of really great agriculture, of living off the land, of living as neighbors and supporting one another. And the South is, yes, it is fried chicken. It's pimento cheese. It's really great deviled eggs.
Uh-huh. My grandmother invented those in New Jersey, where Katie's not really from.
Oh, my word. My grandmother, Lillian Birchfield Brazil Love, is rolling over in her grave right now.
Well, so is Rose Waltz Nastor Katz. Okay.
There you go. So we've got those similarities. But you know, for us, those are those quintessential Southern flavors, but the South is so much more than that. We've got a great Asian influence across our region. We were talking earlier about the Vietnamese influences in our region, a huge Vietnamese population in mm-hmm. the South. We have German heritage. Elizabeth is has German roots. We've just, it's a very rich, rich region that sometimes is sold a little bit short because people do think it's just those quintessential dishes. Right. But it's really about really great ingredients. It's about technique and transforming those into very soulful food.
It's soulful, not soul food. That's a good right. distinction there. Katie and Todd, well, Todd, I guess you mentioned that there you can now get ingredients, everything grown there. And I know some of our friends, and even on the menu here at Roberta's, you'll see Anson Mills grains and legumes and rice and stuff like that. Is that a new phenomenon, or is that a tradition that's been carried on? Was it lost like the rest of America lost their food traditions, or...
I think that tradition has always been there. I mean, Anson's Mills has been there forever, you know. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's funny how people will say that something is new when they discover it, but we've been doing it all this time.
Something is new when the media folks in New York City discover it. Right. Let me clarify that.
Right. You know,
that's when it makes its way to Bushwick, it's new.
It's new, right? But, I mean, you know, like, I've been here 5 days. I probably have had, you know, 20 sets of deviled eggs here, you know.
Right.
You know, and... all overcooked. It's like, this is not how deviled eggs are supposed to be. Yeah. I mean, so the traditions that my family grew up with and the places where I buy food from, I know a lot of these people. I know the guy who makes the bacon. I know him. I know his son. I know his grandson.
Who is that guy? Is this Benton?
No. Well, Alan's in Tennessee. I'm talking about Valdosta, Georgia. You know, a guy named Kenny. Wonderful gentleman down there. And these are the people that I can actually talk to and understand their products and understand why they are so passionate about it. And it's not a mono society where, you know, I can just, you know, focus on me. I have to focus on the farmers. I have to focus on relationships. And that's what South is for me. It's about building relationships with people. And those people allow me to cook the best food I can possibly can.
Cool. Katie, do you have something to add to that about the ingredients and the producers?
I completely agree. I have this great memory of my grandmother in South Carolina. And she had this wonderful small garden that she took care of. And my whole upbringing was about growing different vegetables. Zucchini, what do you do with it? We made tons of zucchini bread. So it's just, it's been there for a long time. It's nothing new. It's just exciting to be back in that area. I've the growing season so long.
Right, which I think also might be key because you have access to these things locally much longer than we do here. Although what's funny is we're sitting here in Roberta's, and I normally don't talk about it that much, but it factors heavily into our lives. You guys just had lunch, and this is a place the food is so local. They grow it on the roof. They grow it all around us in some way, and so there is this essence. And I don't mean to harp on it, but of the things you're talking about now have taken off around the country in Portland, Oregon, and in obviously California, San Francisco. So I still want to get to the heart of this Southern thing. Think about it a little bit, and we'll come back to it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think that it's a question that will be debated for many, many years to come. But and Kat Kinsman with Etocracy posed this question when she was launching Etocracy: what is the South, and what is Southern? And, you know, is the Polish baker in Little Rock, Arkansas, who's working in the only self-contained bakery at the Kroger's, is he Southern? Well, he's been there for 30 years.
Right.
You know, are the French dishes or even the Cuban dishes, Cuban-inspired dishes that are part of, you know, Creole cuisine has deep Cuban roots.
Right.
And is that Southern? And I think at the end of the day, it's about... being in the South is having some being able to maintain your integrity as people, whether you're African or German or South American or Asian, and leveraging, maintaining that while also working with what is surrounding you and your community as far as ingredients go.
Interesting. Let me remind people listening that if you are listening and you have questions, you can email them to us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Or if you are the sort of person who prefers 140 character statements, then you can tweet us your question at TasteMattersHRN. So I don't need to harp on it, but let's hear a little bit. I'm curious to hear both Katie and Todd describe their... menus. Tell us some dishes, and let's try to evoke a taste of the South for our listeners, because it's chilly here in New York, and the South is far from our minds.
Sure. Well, I do have to say that, you know, my restaurant, Curate, is traditional Spanish tapas.
I'm sorry that I completely mispronounced that, and I'm terrible. It looks like curate on my notes, and I got the names right, but not Curate, excuse me. But so there's the example of what you're talking about, that you are part of this Southern celebration, and you're making Spanish tapas. But let's hear.
So for me, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about some of the food. One of the things, such as the dish I'm preparing this evening in New York, is pluma ibérica. It's a pork that comes from Spain, but we're serving it grilled. It's kind of a new way of looking at pork. We've always associated pork with the South. Spain brought it to the South. I do have to add that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So that these transformations are not new is one thing that you're saying there, of course. When you look at food history, there is no original, authentic thing.
Exactly. And then, you know, the side dish I'm pairing with it, which I also serve at my restaurant, is a traditional Spanish dish called migas, traditionally prepared with day-old bread, cooked in usually some sort of animal fat. We're doing, I do a vegetarian version with Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, a celery root, and yogurt puree, which none of those ingredients are inherently Spanish at all. But
they speak to...
Exactly. They speak to me. They speak to where I am and what I have available.
Okay. Todd, you tell us a little bit. Let me guess that you have a Vietnamese restaurant, and I've been... talking around in circles.
No, but I do eat at several, you know, in Atlanta. You know, one thing that really makes Atlanta great and influences a lot of dishes I do is that we have so many different, you know, cultures there. And it makes, you know, cooking a great deal. The dish I'm doing here this evening is wonderful because most of the ingredients came from three farms, you know, right outside the city. I'm doing a wonderful lamb belly with caramelized endive or curly endive, as people call it. Beautiful parsnips, watermelon, radishes. But the star of the ingredients that I'm using is sassafras, and it comes from Blue Ridge Mountain, Georgia. So I drove up there before I came down here, got a pound of sassafras and everything, made sassafras vinaigrette.
Can you explain to the folks listening who have no idea what sassafras is, although they've read it for years?
It's a root beer, so it's just a wonderful item to use. And, you know, they have sassafras trees, you know, right up there in upstate Georgia. And you can do all this, and you can be as creative if you want to be, you know, with the foods right there at home.
Wow. I mean, there was even one, last time I was in Atlanta, I was at Star Provisions, and they had these amazing Georgian cheeses, and I don't think anyone I know would have ever thought that Georgia produces artisanal cheeses, but they were wonderful, and there are all these sorts of things happening, as they are happening, as I said, around the country. Dominique?
We've got beautiful cheeses throughout the South, and we actually do a couple of classes throughout the festival, and we have a Yankee coming in and talking about Southern cheeses, which I'm pretty excited about.
Is that how he'll be introduced, I hope? Right,
exactly.
With his big carpet bag or something,
something like that. It's a she, and but anyway,
I'm getting everything wrong today.
Hey, that's
so
okay.
Exciting here.
No, but she will have her carpet bag as well, and but she is focusing on Liz Thorpe, and she's focusing on what a difference the South makes, and it's interesting to have people in from outside of our region talking about some of the interesting things that are going on.
So let's hear a little bit about the uniqueness of the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, because I think that, you know, I'm involved with the Beard Foundation. We actually have a relationship there, and I think it's unique for some of the let's just go get drunk on the beach kind of festivals that happen. Tell us a little bit about it, Elizabeth or Dominique? Elizabeth.
You do. A disclaimer, I like that we started with a disclaimer.
Yeah.
The James Beard Foundation is involved in the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival.
Heritage Radio Network.
Honesty first.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking more about when you ask what makes us unique and the uniqueness of the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival and what is the South. And what makes us unique is that this is about family and community and about sharing. I mentioned that it's about sitting around a table. And we try to deliver that through our programming. So it's not just a taste or a sample or you're not just walking through a trade show, but you're really getting to experience the South as you walk through our trails and our tasting tents. We call them that you're taking a journey of the culinary South, that you have learning experiences where you're not just watching a dump and stir demonstration, but a chef is really coming and sitting at your table almost, so to speak, and saying, this is what I would serve at home, and this is my kitchen, this is my family, this is how we talk in the South about tradition and what's important to me as a chef and as talent. So I think that's the thing that brings the uniqueness to the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival.
And is the programming you do, which is extensive, I mean, whether it's classes or events or tastings or all sorts of stuff, is that geared towards Atlanta? What do you call people who live in Atlanta? Atlantans?
No,
what
we do. You do call them Atlantans.
Or is it for other people from elsewhere, for like the chefs from all over, not just the South? Maybe you'll welcome some folks from up here. Or
we welcome anyone.
Right? So it is for everybody.
Yeah, so the programming that we've built is really designed to showcase three key themes. The old traditions, so those classic Southern flavors, the bacon, bourbon, meat and three. The new traditions, so this really emerging techniques, emerging flavors that our chefs are taking their recipes to the next level, taking to the tradition to the next level, and then imports and inspiration. So we focus on, have fun with our Southern focus and look at other Southern regions around the globe. Our programming is meant really to have people leave understanding a little bit more about the South and walking away understanding. We kind of have designed it so that each year we go a little bit deeper. In year one, we were really focused on those classic flavors. In year two, we moved into hunting, gathering, foraging, sustainable seafood. This year, we're really getting into women. We're talking about our Latin influences. So it's an evolving program.
We're going to wait for that evolution because we're going to take a quick break, and you're going to talk a little bit more about it, because all food evolves and isn't static, and I think it's an interesting topic, when, especially when you're trying to assert something like the South. You're listening to Taste Matters on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sweet Talk by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and with me in the studio here at Roberta's in Bushwick, we have what feels like the better part of the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. We're joined by Dominique Love and Elizabeth Feichter, who are the co-directors of the festival, although they have a great team of folks. There's so much going on there that two people couldn't possibly do it. And also two chefs who participate in the festival and who are on a bit of a road show with a stop here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, unexpected, I'm sure, on their itinerary. We have Katie Button of Curate. Forget that I said curate at the beginning of the show, and don't forget that it is a Spanish tapas restaurant in Asheville, North Carolina. And also Todd Richards from the Shed at Glenwood in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're talking about the South and what that means in food. But I also want to move the conversation a little bit and talk about what that means in food culture. When we're talking about your clients, the diners, is there an element that you sense on the other side of the equation, not just from the kitchen and the staff, that makes something a Southern food experience? So much of our food culture is experienced these days in restaurants, at least of the sort of foodies who are listening to the show. Since you both operate restaurants, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, Katie?
Sure. Well, one thing is our guests expect that the food that we're serving comes from farms in the area. They're always asking, you know, where everything's coming from, and they expect that we're supporting the local community. The other piece that they expect is they expect that I'm there. They expect that my family is there. We opened a family business. I think that that, to me, coming from my family, being from the South, speaks a lot to me about what the South is. And they expect my mother, my father, and my husband all to be there and involved.
Wow. So how do you deal with that? I mean, isn't every chef's aspiration to have 30 restaurants around the world and deals with hotels and things like that?
It's challenging. That's not my aspiration. Okay. I am, you know, yes, I do have aspirations to open other concepts, but I opened Kurite 2 years ago, and it's my baby, and opening it with your family is such a unique experience.
Sure. Todd, what happens in the dining room that sort of marks the experience at the Shed as Southern?
Well, one thing is we have a very open kitchen, so you get to see things being prepared. Also, you know, we list where items come from and geographic regions of the South where they come from. So people are really, really fascinated to know that, hey, you can get this cheese, you know, from this farmer, from this place. And then they say, well, where can I buy all this? Well, you know, the guy, you know, who sells us most of our produce, he actually has a co-op that he delivers to food markets on Friday and Saturday. So the same items that I'm serving them, you know, preparing for them, they can actually go and purchase them themselves. And then the biggest thing I like to see is when the kids actually are eating really, really great food and say, hey, this is not yucky, or hey, there's green stuff in here, but this tastes good.
green stuff.
Right. I mean, it's not just chopped parsley, you know, it's purslane and baby spinach and things like that. And these kids are actually eating it. There's one kid that comes in, you know, every week, you know, and actually he has a seat at the chef's counter, and he just sits there by himself and he eats, you know, Brussels sprouts and all these things. And you know why he eats it is because it tastes good. Well, I didn't really do that much to it. You know, I warmed it up in the pan, but the farmer, you know, actually did all the work, and I'm just celebrating their, you know, their accomplishments every day.
Interesting. What about what's in the glass? Is everyone drinking sweet tea even in the Spanish tapas place, or is there chocolate and all that kind of stuff?
It's a blend. I mean, yes, we can't have a restaurant in Asheville, North Carolina, without an abundance of sweet tea.
I'm glad you admitted that on air. Thank you.
Yes. Absolutely. We offer simple syrup.
So you can sweeten it to your own
taste. Nice. Exactly. As much as you want. Right. But in addition to that, you know, there's a burgeoning cocktail scene in the South that I've noticed. As well as all over the nation, but with a little bit of a Southern twist, we use a local moonshine in some of our cocktails with Spanish horchata, you know. And so,
oh, wow. Cool.
That sounds good.
I think what's the most interesting about the cocktail scene is that, you know, it's another example of our talent really embracing their history and embracing our roots. I mean, we've got a class. We actually have another Yankee coming down to be a part of the class, but Dave Wondrich is joining us, and we're talking about the Ramos Gin Fizz, and it's got a 125-year-old history. It's difficult to make. It's on the verge of extinction, but yet it's something our mixologists are embracing again. There's also this really amazing viticulture that's evolving across the South. Texas wines are exploding right now.
Wow.
Virginia wines as well, but then you're also looking at North Carolina and Georgia. Tonight at our dinner that we're doing in town, we're actually serving a sparkling wine from Wolf Mountain Vineyards in North Georgia.
Wow.
It's pretty unheard of and pretty daring to come up and serve major national media at a dinner sparkling from the hills of North Georgia. But we believe that it can compete. So we're pretty excited.
I do have to just point out one thing. You just claimed Texas as part of the South, and I want to talk a little bit about that. Texas, what is it? I mean,
well, it depends on who you ask. My father's, you know, born and raised in Mississippi, and so he says the only states in the South are Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia. So it depends, but our real focus is south of the Mason-Dixon line. Mm-hmm. We also took some cues from Southern Foodways Alliance, and they claim Texas as part of the Southern region, so we're embracing that as well. Plus, you know, you can't resist the heat and the great Gulf catches that come in Houston and along the Texas Gulf. So
great. Okay. So you know, I feel compelled. Maybe it's the Yankee in me to move this conversation into delicate waters, let's say. And Katie, you are a woman chef. Todd, you are an African American chef. And I wonder about the history of the South and the culture, that aspect of the complicated past of America, and if that has any bearing on the culture of your restaurants or the food that you do. If there's been any difficulties there, or maybe it's just been a sort of celebration of your backgrounds. I that wasn't on the list of questions, but I just feel like, you know, this is internet radio and we can talk about some things that you can't talk about other places if you're willing. Katie, talk.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Women have always been cooking in the South. Sure. I think that they are the heart and soul of soulful Southern food. So I am proud to be a female chef. There aren't that many who take it to the professional level. So. Right. It's exciting to be among the group that have done that.
Something we talk about all the time at the James Beard Foundation about ways we can help. Todd? Yes.
This is an hour show, right? I'm just
asking. No, but in 3 minutes right, you're going to make a profound statement.
No, yeah. But, you know, being African-American and being in the South is really, you know, it's a blessing. You know, it's a lot of fun to actually be able to cook the things that people in my community think are not, you know, restaurant worthy. Right. It's not only my culture, but also the Latin culture that has that same historical influence, you know, in Southern food. Right now in my kitchen, we were talking about similarities of food, and we do this quite often. And then we were talking about beans and rice and things like that. And in Latin culture, you have, you know, the chorizo and the smoked meats with beans. And then you go to African American culture, you have, you know, beans and ham hock and smoked meats. So in a really simple way, my kitchen became united talking about beans and pork and. You know, I was gone this weekend and, you know, I get all the reports how well they did because they all came together. And that to me is really what, you know, being the experience of the South is about. And that's really how, you know, me as an African American can change the world. I can bring people closer together by finding those same similar cultural roots that we all cook together.
That's great.
And I'd like to add that for me, when I think about the South and Southern food, the history of those dishes that we think of came from the African-American community.
Right. I was going to say, women weren't just cooking, but so were African-Americans there, and that's right, often forgotten. And it's funny, I was recently just in a conference about kitchen workers. There's a large movement now to improve the lot of restaurant workers in general, not just kitchen workers, and traditionally, places where immigrants or minorities, underclasses, or whatever worked and were not as fairly treated as some other people who were more visible in the restaurant, whether they were women or African American or Latin or anything. And there's a strong movement now to try to improve that as an industry. It's not unique to the South, certainly. But it's nice to hear the dialogue, the culinary dialogue, it sounds like, that happens at the Shed.
Well, I think it's important, too, because, you know, these people have families just like I have a family. And, you know, we've, you know, done a great job in increasing wage. We also, we teach people how to read, you know, our Latin community who does not have to speak English or read English, you know, I teach them myself. You know, it's really about empowerment, you know, and I've used this business to travel the entire world. I've been to every continent in this world in this business. And I'm really trying to share those things, you know, with my staff and everything. And I'm not just saying, you know, African-American or Latin. I mean, Asians working, you know, every, you know, group all has this same similar issue. And those issues come across, you know, when you sit there and you work with someone 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, you find out a lot more things about people's families that you really necessarily want to know. And that's what the South is about. It's about, you know, bridging those problems, finding the solutions, and bringing the world forward.
And Mitchell, I would say that Todd could actually talk for an hour on the topic, and in our first year of the festival, we tried to delve into some of these topics, and in fact, Todd and some of the other African-American chefs came up with the whole concept, and it was a really great demonstration and discussion around where are the black chefs, and that was the title of the demonstration. You talked about cultural issues and challenges of getting into and lack of mentors of getting into the culinary world, and this year we're highlighting women in a really special way. We're highlighting distillers and chocolate makers, and so it's a topic that bears a lot of conversation. To that end, there are chefs like Todd and others who are incredibly conscious of what's going on and making sure that there's more inclusion in the industry. Todd talks about teaching English. John Besh has a really great program called Chef's Move out of New Orleans, where he's really focused on bringing younger generations into the kitchen and teaching them the skills. We also, as part of the festival, we invest in Les Dames d'Escoffier and help them with scholarships for women getting into the culinary industry. So I think there are a lot of movements that are out there, and that this is a very keen topic for us, and something that we don't mind talking about, whether it's on the internet or on prime time. So it's something that it's a reality, and it's something that we all embrace.
Great. I appreciate that. And I also feel compelled to say hardly unique to the South. I mean, I think it's like some of the things we're talking about, they're similar across the country, and these are issues in the kitchens all over the country.
Absolutely.
We kid ourselves sometimes in the North, us Yankees, that we don't have the same problems we see elsewhere. In the few minutes we have left, I want to ask all of you, chef and program coordinators alike, in one sentence, really, if you felt like there was a misconception, besides that it's all about fried chicken, that people had about the food of the South or the culture of the South, because now you can't really turn the pages of any magazine, the New Yorker or whatever, and not see something about a chef from Charleston or Charlotte or Atlanta or something. There's definitely a movement happening. But what do you think is the one thing that's misunderstood by some folks from you in deep inside it? And we'll just go around the studio, and we'll start with Katie.
I would say that it's not sophisticated.
Oh. And it is, in fact,
it is, in fact, very sophisticated, and there are many restaurants and chefs who are trying to portray that in their plates and their food.
Very interesting. Dominique?
I think the South is underestimated, and that we are oftentimes taken at face value in those more trendy elements, but there are centuries of history. There's a richness about our region, a seriousness, and quite frankly, we are the last bastion of regional cuisine in our country, and it's something that we hope everyone stands up and takes notice of. It is a foundation that influences across the region, whether it's the deviled eggs that are appearing at other menus, in other areas of the country, or it's really our techniques or how we're working with our farmers. So it's something that needs to be really, we hope that more people pay attention to it and dig deeper.
Elizabeth?
I think it's that people sometimes think of the South as a trend.
Ah.
We're not going away. We've been here for years.
Okay.
This is something that is meaningful to us and is longstanding, and it's our history. And just because it's simple doesn't mean that it's unrefined or not sophisticated, but we're here to stay. This is something that'll be around for a long time.
Great. Todd?
I think the South is, people don't give enough credit to the scientific impact of cooking in the South. The techniques that we have to use, the preservation methods that we have taught the entire world, really is not given enough credit to. If you look at like the Lewis and Clark expedition, if it wasn't for fried rabbits, they would have never made it. So those things like that, I think people get misinformed, and they don't understand the scientific impact of regional Southern cooking.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for joining us, for coming out here to Bushwick, a long way from Atlanta, but not so long if in food miles of a different sort, not food miles of carbon footprint. Next week, well, thank you first of all for being here. It was great to talk to you. Next week, we're excited to welcome a totally different conversation, but not unrelated. We have Robert Valgenti coming, and he is a professor of philosophy who does a lot of writing and thinking about the aesthetics of food and how those relate to the philosophy of art and whether or not they do. And he has a whole new approach for putting the two together. I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. We always have a fascinating conversation here on Taste Matters. Listen to us Wednesdays at 11 live or on our iTunes or podcast or even on the archive at heritageradionetwork.org. In the meantime, before next Wednesday, eat something sophisticated, refined, soulful, that isn't fried chicken, and think of the South while you do it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.